I'm going to ask Carol to talk about the wilderness in the North Cascades.
Another broad subject.
Well, that means you can say anything you want.
That's too broad. You're going to have to ask me something more specific.
Okay, what do you do? What do you see when you go out on the trail? What do you see? What do you see that keeps you going out on the trail? What's nice about it?
Oh, so many things. Well, the reason I spend my life in wilderness instead of being a school teacher is because now I'm having trouble with that. I think I'm lucky that I'm a very slow moving person because I see more. I stop and smell the roses and pick a leaf and look at its shape and look up things in my book if I don't know their names and wish I could remember the Latin names and all of that. It's such an incredible privilege to be out there much of the time in all sorts of weather I wouldn't go out in for recreation, and yet I have to be out there working, and it's incredible. I've gotten a far broader view of wilderness. I started in recreation with a recreational view of wilderness, trying to keep people from pitching their tents on little meadows and just generally dealing with people. And at this point, I feel like I'm coming somewhere near understanding a broader ecosystem. I'll never probably be able to understand what was there once, but what's there now, I think I'm seeing in a broader context. I'm seeing the issues of air quality and water quality and the ways that science can begin to understand our world, because there are still some natural places left. Where shall I go from there?
Well, tell what you do when you work.
Okay. I cut brush.
Why do you cut brush?
I cut brush because I think trails are a very important thing. I think trails are a protector of wilderness. If trails are open enough for people to walk, or ride horses on and be able to see wilderness. Most people stay on those trails, and they're a very, very, very narrow line through wilderness that people can, if they have the right attitude, they can, or the attitude I consider to be right, they can walk into wilderness and see it, touch it, enjoy it, and not hurt it, and be immeasurably helped themselves by being there.
Speaking of trails for people and horses, I have a real problem with horses.
I mean, yeah.
Is that what you were going to bring up?
I was going to bring that up. Ask the same question. I hear that all the time, and I know there are some benefits. I was going to ask you about the benefits.
I mean, I think we have to keep horses in mind for the handicapped. I mean, if handicapped people are going to be given the privilege of seeing and being part of the wilderness, that is probably people in wheelchairs and those kinds of people. That's probably the only way they're going to get in there.
That's not true.
Well, I don't know. Maybe not. Well, we can argue that.
Okay.
Okay. But the problem I have, of course, is that especially in wet or damp weather, they do so much damage to the trails and around the trails, because as they do damage on a trail, they start widening the trail and going around the damaged spots. So the damage gets wider and wider and wider. And then for people who try to hike those kinds of trails, it's even weeks after it's dried out or it hasn't rained, the holes made by the horses still hold water So the trail stays wet long after the rains have stopped because of those holes. And so then you get people going around as well. And the trail keeps getting wider and wider. And I've seen this in Manning Park.
I've seen four or five trails parallel.
It's just a real mess. I mean, you've got the trails going all over the place with horses going through there.
Well, one of the things that's helpful about it, for one thing, I like horses. And how come I like horses when I try to maintain trails that horses mess up? I don't know. But hikers mess them up, too. I like the horses partly because they're a piece of traditional America that's still left. Those guys that are outfitters are a relic. They're something that's left of what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. Those basic Americans who basically hate government and want to live an independent life. And they take a pretty fair number of people into the woods who otherwise probably couldn't go very far into the wilderness. And they're not truly handicapped. They might be elderly. They might be people who have hiked all their lives and really can't carry a pack anymore.
But isn't the same argument used for cars? You've got to have cars so those kinds of people can get up there. So you've got to have roads.
Well, I see all the signs of it. I just happen to like horses. And I've worked hard with, I'm not a horsewoman, and a horse, when it looks at me, goes, you know, and promptly starts for home. And but I have tried very hard to learn from the outfitters and other horse people how I can maintain the trails so that horses can use them and not destroy them and not be hurt in the process, and not lose any horses in the process. But how those horse owners can tell me how some of the damage that's caused by horse groups can be ameliorated. I was in the Chelan Sawtooth Wilderness for a number of days, and it was the first time I'd ever been over there. So my fellow wilderness ranger Marty asked me to take a, you know, with fresh eyes, look at the big horse camps over there and tell him what I thought about what ought to be done to improve those. And most of the damage in those camps is very, very old. Those guys really are changing over time to slightly more protective ways of dealing with the wilderness, but the old ways were very destructive. And so I was in a place called Twin Springs, which is a camp up there at a very high elevation. And it's a mess. And people have tethered horses to trees and make big circles around the trees, and the roots are showing. And it's obviously not only been damaged in the past, but it's still being damaged. So I ran into four people on horses up there in the area, and they had just come through that area too. And for one thing, I found out that the one couple in particular are from Twisp, and they're part of the Backcountry Horsemen organization, which is a forerunner in getting horse users to be more protective of wilderness and to use more up-to-date methods. And I asked them what ought to be done there to try to improve, you know, use the horses.
What did they say? Kick the horses out?
No. They said put up hitching rails. And that's a structure, and it's in wilderness. And you think twice before you ever put up a structure in wilderness. But they said that's the only thing that'll help. If you put up hitching rails in a place that has some shade where the horse users will use them, and they're not going to tie into trees. Well, that's kind of practical suggestions that we need to be listening to.
Can I address that too, Carol?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to mildly disagree with with the idea of more and more people going in with pack trains and that type of thing, because we see it in our area, and I'm glad you see what you do, that the damage is old damage. Mm-hmm. We see brand new damage.
Yeah.
I see some too.
All through
some
the
of it is old, some of it is old damage and some of it is new damage.
Now, all through the Bitterroot National Forest, there are more and more horses going in, and they destroy areas, and they do exactly as you said. They tether to trees. They cut down a lot of live things, mm-hmm. and things like that. And that's something that I have a bit of an aversion to. But I'm going to come on real strongly in favor of horses in the wilderness for one big reason. How did those trails, many of them, get there in the first place? And who carries the equipment? Are you going to carry a big two-man saw and the axes and all of the stuff that you need to clear trails on your back? 30, 40, 50 miles into the wilderness, are you going to be able to clear, for instance, Forest Service contracts people to go in and clear certain trails? They'll put out a contract for 100 miles of trails in a certain area. And people who go in with horses can do a wonderful job of trail clearing for those of us who walk. And I'm willing to go along with that.
So you're willing, you're willing to go along to the extent that for maintenance purposes, but mm-hmm. what we're talking about here is for recreation purposes.
Well, yeah, if they can minimize the impact, there's a big controversy around our area because the Bitterroot National Forest is now trying to limit horse camps and stock, the number of stock on the trails and things like that. And it's a big controversy. They've overdone the horses and they're trying to cut back. And with a limited number and some control, fine. And the backcountry horse clubs are wonderful.
They're terrific.
They will have weekend outings where they themselves will go out as a voluntary service and clear trails. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've ever gone out on trails first thing in the spring, as soon as the weather breaks and you can get out in there with the trees all over the place. And worse than following, you know, ruts and stepping over road apples and all of that kind of stuff is when you have to crawl over a big tree here, a big tree there. They go in and clear all that stuff out. So that you want to.
Well, I think we can focus. We can resolve the horse issue by saying that there may be a right way to do it. Mm-hmm. I remember my first great trip in the wilderness was in the Bridger Wilderness in Wyoming. I was in a horse group, and we had about 25 riders and over 85 horses and mules all together. So that was pretty disastrous on the area, and furthermore, the outfitter had a chainsaw to cut the wood. So we don't do that kind of thing anymore. But I'm glad you brought it up because I think horses do a lot of damage, and there are places where they should never be. There are places where they should be under certain circumstances. And there are certain times I go tromping up a rocky, steep rocky trail and I say, gee, I wish I had a horse. And there's something to be said for some of the outfitters. Some of the outfitters out west were strong supporters of the Wilderness Act and still are. Some of them are really first-class conservationists. Some of them are terrible guys and should be dispatched from wherever they are doing business. I don't know. So it's a tough one, but there should be strict regulations, and it's great to see the stockmen themselves trying to do something. The outfitters trying to do something. Did you want to say something?
Yes.
Shoot.
I think our main problems with the whole outdoor system is that we have too many people occupying the same spaces at the same time. Years ago, after World War II up to the 70s, you didn't find lots and lots of people out on the trail. You didn't find lots and lots of horses out on the trail. Now in this day and age where people have more money, more more time, more better equipment to get out. There are more horses on the trail, and there are more people on the trail. Our own trails up here are restricted for the number of people that are allowed on that trails as best as possible, right? The encampment areas down south of Highway 2 in the last 10 years have got so overcrowded with people that they have had to put a reservation system in effect for people to hike 40 miles up into the tops of the mountains.
And there's going to be more of that.
And there's going to be more of it. And whether it's horses or it's people or I don't know what would come next, we've got rid of the RVs out of the trail system for the most part. We just have to protect what we have with the resources and the knowledge that we have.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's not a question of whether it's horses or not. It's not horses. It's what's the impact and how we're going to protect what we got, especially when we're talking about an ecological approach. We're not talking about a recreational approach. We're talking about an ecological approach to all of this. And what is the influence of the horse on the ecology or the skier or whomever or the numbers? And where do we find the balance? The right balance in numbers to save the area for what it... Did you want to say something?
I have a brother that used to be with the Mead Corporation before he retired.
The Mead Corporation?
Mead Corporation. They're located in Ohio, I think. And
Mead paper?
His job was finding sites for mills.
Yeah, sure.
Well, in finding a site for a mill, you have to have an adequate supply of timber.
Right.
Somewhere around. And they could grow timber in the southeast in about 10 or 12 years, they could replace it. Well, when you could replace a stand of timber in 10 or 12 years, it reduces some of your other problems. So these folks up here have got more of a problem with competition, I think, from things like that than they have in some other respects, maybe.
No, you're absolutely right. The big paper corporations in particular, they move from here down to the south. Mm-hmm. That's where they get their raw material.
Yeah, and I submit maybe the particular species of pine that grows down there doesn't grow in this climate. I don't know.
It's a fast-growing pine down.
Slash pine or something like
that's
that.
That's exactly right.
I think that we can approach things from an ecological perspective, which is really important, but I think if you're going to be successful in maintaining that perspective, you have to have the population behind you. And the only way you're going to get the population and the politicians behind you is to make sure the population sees what they're protecting and has a feeling for it and loves it. And the only way you can achieve that is not by saying, ecologically, we want to keep that wilderness preserved. If somebody has never seen that wilderness or a part of it, they're not going to be writing letters to their congressmen.
I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you. Because that's the basis on which our National Park Service operates. They say exactly the same thing. They say, we've got to have more people coming into our national park to get more support for our parks. In the meantime, the parks are degraded and debased. And the people, they don't support the parks anyway. It's just a very cheap experience. It's going to a popcorn playground. It's Disneyland provided by the federal government. What we need is people who understand and who care about it and who speak up for it, not people who will go and recreate and ruin the place in the process. We need people who treasure their experiences and are willing to go to bat with their congressmen because they care about what they've seen. Yes, I agree, I want people to go. But on wilderness terms. And furthermore, I'll tell you, we have learned and we have demonstrated that you don't have to provide for the handicapped. The handicapped, I've been with the handicapped in wilderness and they the hard way and they love it.
I got a blind daughter and I can't get her to hike at all. If I can get her on horses, I can get her out there.
Well, I'm going to tell you about this group, Wilderness Inquiry, that started in Minnesota, and they're now all over. And your daughter, they'd love to have your daughter make a trip. And I went with the blind guy.
Yeah, but she won't go unless you can give her, put her on a horse. She's not going to walk.
Well, how about a canoe?
Well, she'll do that.
And it was just one of them.
What I'm saying is that for these areas, you've got to make special provisions to get the handicapped out there. Like, you've got to allow...
And there's a guy who works in the Forest Service, and I was with him at a meeting over in Montana recently. He works in their Washington office on this issue. He's blind. And he goes everywhere, and he loves it, and makes great speeches about it. We're learning.
He's exceptional. I mean, the vast majority of the handicapped are not getting out there.
That's our fault. We're not helping them to get out there. But we don't have to we don't have to treat wilderness like a building with special facilities. They get out there. I was with this blind guy. It was just marvelous. And I want to do it again. And your daughter should be in those trips. And if she won't hike, she take her in a canoe. I'm going to get you that material. Yes, ma'am.
Well, it's just amazing the amount of work and effort to undo and redo all the doo-doo that's been done in the past.
That's it. It's the doo-doo that's been done in the past. But
it strikes me that... How can we leverage what we learn from this effort to the future? And bear with me.
You're on course.
We're in the stewardship of this planet, Earth. But we're not going to be constrained by this planet. We're going to go to other planets. We're going to go to the moon, and we're going to go... Now, is there any effort that's going to be... You know, you see all the things about the trash that's already been left by the moon,
Right.
Walking the moon, and they've left all the debris and things. Is there any effort about some preservation effort toward the pristine moon? Or whatever planet, do you understand what I'm saying?
Moon.
Can we take the lessons we learned from where we are now and leverage them to our future? So we don't have to spend so much time and effort doing and undoing and redoing on other places that we will choose to live.
I'm telling you, they established Antarctica as a preserve, and they're screwing it up right and left. And I was on a cruise around South America at Tierra del Fuego, and what do I see at the tip of South America? But oil drilling down at the tip of, I could not believe it. Or in the jungles of Ecuador,
How about the foot of Mount Everest?
In the foot of Mount Everest, anywhere and everywhere. So we gotta get, and the place to begin really is right where we are in our own communities. Once we get our own communities straightened out, where the adversaries, or I'm sorry, this woman left. She was talking about Oregon, where we got more states and communities and cities and churches and everybody all pulling on this thing at home in our own communities. Then we can deal with bigger things, or broader things, or future things. And you're right, we got to get rid of the old doo-doo. It's a mindset that doesn't work anymore, because too many people, too much greed that feeds on too many people.
Well, I think we have here and among people that we know and work with in this group, we have a very reasonable approach to that. We can all understand each other, and we can all take that direction. But when, and I refer back to that statement when I misunderstood what you said, using the word wall, we're facing a tremendous propaganda machine from the wood products industry. And they put out unbelievable television programs. And one thing that they do, when we're talking about access, anyone, most of us anyway, and on horseback, if that's the answer, can get into these wilderness areas. They're not locked out. But one of these propaganda flicks that they put on television, the wood products industry, shows a locked gate. It zeroes in on it and says, they have locked us out. We can no longer get in there.
That propaganda does not work.
But if an awful lot of people believe it, and
that don't you believe that people
believe? I don't believe that, but there are an awful
every,
lot of people
every
who believe
single
that.
Survey that's yeah. made of the American people, asking them their views on the environment, including the wilderness, finds strong support. Including the timber industry itself, several years made a survey on how do you feel about wilderness. They got the wrong answer. Because there was overwhelming for support of wilderness.
All right.
Absolutely. And the Los Angeles Times has made a survey. It was just wonderful. I should have brought it along, or I could have brought it along. It was just astonishing to find the strong support of the American people for wilderness. I mean, they do a lot of damage. They have a lot of clout, but they don't convince people. They just don't.
Michael, we've touched on something a couple of times that I think is important about wilderness, though, and that was that the Wilderness Act was passed with a lot of compromises, with the support of a great many groups of people who aren't your regular your hikers, you know, or your environmentalist hikers. Yeah, there were hunters, fishermen. Outfitters, horse people,
and livestock grazers.
Livestock grazers, all sorts of people who didn't want to see the amount of wild land diminished, but they had their own agenda as to how that as to how that wild land would continue to be used. And but those people really did have a lot to do with the fact that we have a wilderness system now. Everybody came together and said, we want wilderness. So when people are shocked in the fall, which Holden is generally pretty shocked when hunters come in, hunters, like anyone else, are asked to go light on the land, and we go out and patrol. We don't ask them for their hunting license. We pay attention to how they're camping out there. And we try and teach them how to camp appropriately. Mm. And I never see a game warden up here, but we don't try to do that job. Mm-hmm. But we try to teach them to change some of the old-fashioned ways that many of them have.
And now what's the reaction?
Oh, they're marvelous. There's a bunch of guys who come up here who are... I see the same men every year, and unfortunately, I don't think I've ever seen a woman among them. But, and I'm not a hunter, don't want to be a hunter, don't think much of hunting in many ways, and yet, those people, they're legal, they're traditional, the people who come up here are, they're hiking in and packing out their meat, within their own ethical system, they're extremely ethical. And I think we need to recognize that hikers from suburbia are not even the primary users of the wilderness. I used to watch the way that I lived in Skykomish, which is kind of is a small town of pretty basic people, and that used to be a logging town, not much anymore. Almost in wilderness, and I feel rather badly for those kinds of communities where wilderness is kind of their backyard, and yet they're going to be facing these permit systems that are in direct conflict with their way of life. These folks pick mushrooms. They go into the wilderness to get something, to do something, to gather something. They pick berries, they pick mushrooms, they hunt, they fish. They seldom use the trails. They have secret places that they go for these things. And they have a totally different and really very, very basic way of and a non-destructive way of using wilderness. And they don't fit into that permit system at all. Because for one thing, thinking, you decide to go pick mushrooms because that particular day, the mushrooms are ready because you've been in that contact with mushrooms all your life and you just know. Mm. And what if you don't have a permit, I differ with that, and at the same time, I recognize the necessity of the permit system. We're going to have to have.
I spent a lot of time around the Great Smoky Mountains in the east, and.